Well, I think I had some topic in mind to discuss, but it will be, how to say, it will violate time ordering because it will involve things that will be relevant after Max's talk, and so maybe that's not a good idea. The other option, so, is to talk about effective theories of topological insulators and recent work we have done with Shinsei and Atma. The other option is to discuss some of the topics that Philip mentioned today, which in some sense are perhaps more practical for, in some ways, but they have, I think, relevance to experiment with, if you excuse me the word. Okay. So maybe I'll do that, given that Philip is here, and I think he already, in some sense, presented some of the issues, and I want to discuss some implications of what you said and the things that I think need to be addressed and some extensions. So there are, as Philip showed, in simple models like the 2D EJ model and some limits of the Hubbard model as well, one sees a D-wave superconductor or a state which I guess will be called a striped superconductor. In other words, it has is a D-wave state plus some kind of density wave. Of some sort. We have to negotiate what density wave that is. And the other is a state that he calls the antiphase superconductor, and I call the pair density wave superconductor. Okay. So these are one of the issues that is clear, at least from staring at the pictures that we were shown this morning, is that locally, all the states look the same. So they all look like patches of the wave superconductors, essentially. And then there are some of them are homogeneous, some of them are inhomogeneous, but they locally, and that's the origin of the fact that they are competitive in energy, you're essentially minimizing the local energy. So you're trying to make the local energy as low as possible. Okay. And the system, because of its strongly correlated nature, doesn't really know what to do. So there is an old argument for why you get systems which are inhomogeneous. This argument is due to Emery and Kivelson back in 93, I think. So the argument was something like that. You dope a MOT insulator, like something looks like an L state, and you put some holes in it, and they are far apart from each other, okay? And you minimize the energy, you disrupt some of the local correlations of the MOT insulator, so that, in other words, there will be a change in the local energy, that's a change in the chemical potential of the holes. But if two holes are together, they are happier than if they are apart. So they form some sort of bound state, you might think. And in the early simulations, exact diagonalizations, essentially people thought this was a mechanism of pairing. But in fact, if you put a third hole, it goes there, and the energy is even lower. You put a fourth hole, it goes even lower. So what you get is formally something like looks like phase separation. So phase separation, on the other hand, breaks translation symmetry in a rather drastic way, is super localization. They all congregate in one place spontaneously, if you take that limit literally. But the kinetic energy actually fights that. And if you include the Coulomb interaction, it's even worse. And so the system has to reach some balance. And the balance is to make the system inhomogeneous, is one possible outcome. Okay, so this you can think that locally also the repulsive interactions allow to have D-wave superconductivity, and that people know that this is possible. So this competition of states in the strongly correlated limit is actually somewhat natural. Okay. Now, what is the total outcome of that? It's a complicated problem. It cannot be treated in perturbation theory. So it's not something you can start from a well-defined Fermi liquid and think of this as an instability of a Fermi liquid. And if, I think the simulations clearly make that point. The question is how generic this situation is. The state that we were shown today has not only the wave superconductivity, but has is inhomogeneous both in the charge and the spin channel. So it has magnetism, quite robust, as we saw. But it has essentially also some kind of charge density wave, or density of stripe, charge stripe sitting on top of it. So one of the questions is, this is something I've been interested in for quite some time. And so we have looked for models that actually one can solve by doing honest analytic theory. And if you try to do that, you go to one dimension because it's very hard to do anything else. In one dimension, you can use a machinery bosonization. Also, the MRG works very well. And states of this type are seen in other models of strongly correlated systems. One is the so-called Kondo Heisenberg model. So essentially what it is you have a spin chain. It's an antiferromagnetic spin chain with some coupling J Heisenberg here. And you have essentially an electron gas, or if you will, a Luttinger liquid. So it's not gapped. So it has both a gapless charge and spin excitations. Because this guy is an insulator, you cannot do direct electron tunneling between them. It's suppressed by the charge gap. And the only thing you can put is essentially a Kondo exchange interaction between this guy and that. This problem you can solve essentially everywhere. It's not an interaction at one point. So people call it Kondo, you think Kondo is an impurity, but this is just an array, so everywhere you can do this exchange interaction.
The line on top is non-interaction?
No, it is a Luttinger liquid in general.
Oh, it's a Luttinger liquid,
and it's not gapped. It's a Luttinger liquid, so it has both a gapless charge and spin excitations. Okay. But the bottom line, the bottom guy is an insulator, so you cannot tunnel. Okay. So you can certainly couple the spin excitations of this guy with the spin excitations of that guy, and that's essentially what the Kondo coupling can do. Okay? So this problem was studied a long time ago by various people, Sikema, Affleck, and White, using DMRG. And they found that for a broad range of parameters, provided that this is conducting and J Kondo is actually larger, J Heisenberg is larger than J Kondo initially, at least. The limit of J Heisenberg equals zero is rather pathological, and people fight about it, and I will not discuss that case. So there is a broad range of this parameter space that the people that work in Kondo systems like heavy fermions, they call that the Kondo singlet phase. It's actually a spin gap state, and it's superconducting. Okay, so it has only one charge collective mode left. For those of you that know the terminology, this is in the Balance and Fisher terminology. This is C1 is zero, so it has one gapless charge mode and no gapless spin modes left. So it looks like a rather simple problem. So they found that there is a broad range of parameters where there is a spin gap. You say, well, it looks like a superconductor, what did you expect? And that's the end of the story. It was explored later by Zakhar and Svelik, and later by Zakhar himself in a much more clear paper, that the superconductivity is rather strange. It seems to be odd parity. in particular. So that's one of the things that they focused on. And more recently, in a paper with Erisberg and Steve Kivelson and me, we did, or rather, we, this is like the papal we, Eris did the simulation, I didn't do the simulation. We re-examined the old simulations of these people using methods that Steve White developed more recently by essentially tweaking the boundary conditions. One of the problems with the MRG is that it's a semi-infinite system, and so the boundary condition here is actually not a weak perturbation. So it tends to enhance the stripiness in particular, because it tends to pin the phase modes in the vicinity of the boundary. But you can actually use that defect as a virtue, and essentially you can put, for instance, a superconducting operator here to as a boundary condition, or a magnetic field which may be different in between the two of them, and the same with the charge. So you can actually play with the boundary conditions to look at the various operators that are present here and how they decay. Since it's a 1D problem, you cannot really have long range order, you have power loss at best. But what is interesting is that in this particular system is that all fermion bilinears decay exponentially. So for instance, the pair field for the D-wave superconductor decays exponentially. The same with the charge density waves and the spin density waves and all that. The spin density waves we expect because of the spin gap, but it's surprising that the pair field, so if you just simply try to construct a pairing operator here and you look at how it propagates into the bulk, you would expect if there is quasi long range order, it will decay like a power law. Instead of that, it decays exponentially fast. The only operators that don't decay exponentially, decay like power loss, are composite operators. So for instance, you can take the triplet superconductor from the top guy with the spin density wave, say the nail state for the simple case of nearest neighbors here. This guy decays exponentially, and this guy decays exponentially, but the product decays like a power law. And this state is nominally a pair density wave in the sense that the superconductivity oscillates as in a Larkin-Ovchinnikov state. So it has its oscillatory character, okay, which inherits from the short-range order of the spins. So it has very much like the pictures that we saw today, that the sign essentially of the superconducting order parameter, the amplitude changes as you go across a spin. The spins actually decay, have only short range order, but the state remembers it. On the other hand, the superconductivity is essentially inherited from that, that part. And it has the interesting feature that this is actually is a spin triplet. So you see the dot product is a spin singlet, this is an SE2 invariant, but this guy alone is a spin triplet. So this is odd parity. So in fact, if you go and do bosonization more carefully, what you find is that this pair density wave state that is seen in this case is actually a topological superconductor. We proved that more recently in a paper with Gil Cho, Rodrigo Soto Garrido, and me. So it's an interesting example of states that are superconducting, but they are, due to their strong correlated nature, they are inhomogeneous, as in the cases we saw today, but they turn out to be, I always say that this side of my brain works in high TC and looks for order, and this other side looks for topological phases. Sometimes they talk to each other. This is an example of that. It actually has two Majorana modes at the end, provided that at least SZ is conserved, this doublet cannot be gapped. So this is in some sense similar from that point of view to the Haldane chain. To the, if you take the Haldane state with open boundary conditions, you also have the spin a half that is dangling at the end. So this is an analog of that. But it's a superconductor. It's a state, by the way, that conserves this, is perfectly charge conserving. So you cannot even do Vogelius the gen here because this is a quartic operator in fermions. So you can't even write this down in the. It turns out that after you do, you turn the crank of bosonization, you can write it in terms of some sort of effective Majorana operators in the problem that are gapped, that actually have to be viewed as solitons of this of the spin sector of this problem. These Majorana operators actually have zero modes that essentially are localized at the endpoints. So for instance, if you take a closed circuit and you put here this pair density wave, this pair density wave with essentially the uniform D wave, which you can also have, then here you're going to have this end states essentially going to be localized.
Is this the fermion number parity of this emergent fermion is concerned?
It's related to the, it's essentially the parity of SZ that is to, needs to be concerned. It's essentially that, yes. It turns out that by the end of the day, you recover something that is in the universality class of the Kitaev chain, but it's not related to the microscopic fermions. It's actually related to the solitons of this lattice. Okay, so it's a highly non-trivial state in that sense, even though it's, it is actually, it does fall in within the usual classification. Yes? You have two. Two. Yes. You can in the spin sector. You can. This is the whole. It's like the Haldane chain.
So two states.
No, two on each side at each end. In each end, they have two. It's a spin a half. It's like in the Haldane chain, you have a spin a half at the endpoint, right? The Haldane chain, the spin one chain. So at the end point, if you has a spin a half degree of freedom at the end. And there's the other spin a half at the other end.
So that's four.
Yeah, that's what I mean. At each end, there are two.
No, no, no. So each end, there are four. So, so that, no, that sparks not the T symmetric
proportion, protected by parity of SZ. This is protected by parity of SZ here. That's all.
It's like Haldane.
That's what I mean. It's Haldane chain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a spin a half. Two Majoranas. You can think of that as a spin a half. Well, okay. All right. It is actually two icing models, and that's why it works this way. Essentially, it maps after you do bosonization into two icing CF, not CFTs, because you're not at a critical point. There is a phase transition, actually. There is one regime that looks like the uniform D wave, and the other regime that looks like that. And if you put the domain wall between them, then you get this, essentially. So this is a, now we also found the same relationship, the same situation if you have a more conventional ladder. So you take a two-leg ladder. And if you take a two-leg ladder, you say, well, there are, in the two-leg ladder, you have two bands, the bonding and the anti-bonding bands. And now you put a chemical potential somewhere, so you feel you have some finite feeling. Imagine you take the bonding band to be, say, half filled or some fractional filling, so, but with a V which is large enough to open a charge gap, so this actually becomes an insulator. So this guy essentially becomes formally the spin chain, and the other guy is essentially the Lattice liquid. So much of this essentially is also true in a ladder as a function of filling. There are phases of this type that are also inhomogeneous in this sense. The only difference is in here the translation symmetry is explicitly broken because you have to put the spins in special places. Here is the breaking is spontaneous. But aside from that, they are the same problem. So these are the only examples I know, in fact, of microscopic modes where I can prove there is a bare density wave of the type you showed, except that here there is a spin gap, so there is no magnetism. Okay, so in some sense, it's half of your the state you see. There is the long-range magnetism that you showed in your simulation. It seems to be absent here, but it's a very close relative of that. Okay, so this is a, it sort of raises a general question about what is the nature of these states. I'm not saying that every pair density wave has to be necessarily topological, but the only ones I know how to construct happen to be. Of course, if you do mean field theory with FFLO or something like that, in one dimension, because there is nesting, you can always do it, but then you need to put some large Zeeman field or something like that to tune that, as in the usual case. But in higher dimensions, in two dimensions, that usually is not a viable approach because you need very large interactions to support that. So this is a question I want to raise. Is there are there the I think these type of inhomogeneous states are here to stay. They are not an artifact of your calculation. I think they are is in some senses a necessity of the strong coupling nature of these states. And the other fact is the fact that the energies are so close without actually fine-tuning your model, to me speaks to a property that is seen in the experiment, which is that when you, so let me now come to the experiments. So you talked about LBCO. So this is the original high-temperature superconductor near 1/8 is where the state, at least there is some phenomenological argument for why this is a good state. In YBCO, where people for a long time swore that there was no inhomogeneity, now it is seen. And in YBCO, you have a phase diagram as a function of the oxygen content that looks something like this. This is the antiferromagnet, as usual. And the superconductor looks something like that, the TC. And of course, this, the scale here is much higher. Now, when they apply, so the so-called 1/8 anomaly is around here. The analog of the 1/8 for YBCO is around that point. And the spin gap, which is present in YBCO, arises more or less here when Y is of the order of 0.6 or so. Okay. Below this point, people saw the so-called fluctuating stripes, and if they apply a magnetic field, then they become static. And then they look a little bit like what you showed. There is no evidence of any pair density wave, by the way. No one has ever found it in YBCO. Okay. But charge order is seen in this regime, even in the absence of magnetic fields. And when they apply magnetic fields, this dome looks a lot like the minimum that is seen in LBCO. And then all of this essentially is some sort of a charge density. People call it the charge density wave. The value of the period seems to change. They are period 2 and period 4. The people fight whether they are unidirectional or bidirectional, and this is still a matter of contention at the moment. So there is a question whether this some of the things that we have seen today, they seem to be there for more general reasons. And the TCs of these things, as you apply, say, a magnetic field, they come with critical temperatures which are all of the same order of magnitude. The only large critical temperature is that of the antiferromagnet. Everything else has about the same critical temperature, which is rather surprising. In critical phenomena, to have two competing orders with about the critical temperature, you have to be fine-tuned to some multicritical point. And here you have enough order parameters that we have to, I don't know, tune how many parameters in the Landau theory to actually get close to that point. And this seems to be more generic for better reasons than Landau theory would suggest. So this is the sense in which, at least I like to call these intertwined orders, in the sense that the orders appear to grow together from the same microscopic physics. Okay, and that's essentially, in a sense, is what these simulations appear to suggest as well. So I don't know what is the nature of the states, there is no real good theory of this. Much of what people do is phenomenology. And there is certainly no evidence of layer decoupling as it is seen here in YBCO. No one has ever seen that. Okay.
YBCO is rather different. There's bilayer.
Yeah. Probably, well, okay, so in LBCO, what happens is that they have this alternation. Is the so you get the pictures that he showed today, they look like this, right? In LBCO, because of the lattice structure, they sort of alternate. So the first, the next layer goes like this, the other layer goes like that. And actually, by Coulomb, it's probably shifted. So this actually is probably period four in this direction, which is gigantic in LBCO. In YBCO, there probably is something inside the bilayer. It's not clear whether there is so there is some discussion whether it's in one of the in the bilayer, maybe in one direction is like this or like that, and it's not clear at the moment experimentally which one is which. It turns out that there is some discussion amongst the X-ray people about what they see, whether, okay, so this, let me not get into that. They're fighting with each other, okay, so this is something they need to sort out. But the fact is that this type of, at least charge order is, in this regime, there is a large spin gap. It's very hard to do this. You see basically no magnetism here to speak of.
And,
no, no, but here is a metal too. And you see essentially this, you see low energy fluctuations that look like the spin stripes that he showed today. But in this other regime, there is a robust spin gap. The magnetic fields, the static magnetic fields that people can produce in the laboratory are not large enough. Of course, if you use pulse fields, you can really kill all this. You can even more or less kill the superconductivity. Okay. But the fact is that this charge order state appears at very low magnetic fields and continues at higher fields. And so all this data from quantum oscillations that the UVC people get, well, actually the UVC and the Quebec people get the same thing, and the Sherbrooke people get. Is now interpreted as evidence for some sort of charge order state that is present there. But now, whether that charge order state is related or not to this pair density wave is not known. And I would think that nature would have to be very perverse to have the same copper oxide plane in both materials and have completely different types of order in both of them. So there must be some relation between them. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but there must be some.
Isn't the trend of periodicity of this stripe?
They are different. It's somewhat different. Yes, that's true. There are some differences. So it's not that they're identical, and this may be related to this bilayer business. But they're also different in the sense that in LBCO there is a great deal of magnetism, so they really look like the things that Philip showed us today. At least if you put together neutron scattering and X-rays, they basically look like the kind of things that he showed us today. In YBCO, basically, you don't see any kind of spin stripes, just not there. They are seen in this regime as fluctuating, quote fluctuating stripes, which I would call that, I think, is to me like being half pregnant. But actually, a magnetic field pins them. Yes.
In terms of the one band model,
people have done calculations. I don't know what they look like, but people have done calculations of that type. That will be interesting to know. Yeah.
Because in the end, yes. If there's a positive T prime, this would have the tendency to suppress the anti-paramagnetic order.
Yes.
Which then, I could well imagine that in that case,
yeah.
It also describes the spin order could be suppressed, and eventually have it just described.
Okay. So let me finish by saying that one of the things we also thought was to put a bunch of things in the spirit of what we heard today Taylor talk about. We thought of putting a bunch of these ladders together to go to two dimensions and try to Of course, if you do that in a naive way, and you so you take now your stripes will look like these ladders. And if I want this ladder to terminate here, of course, there will be some Majorana fermion sitting there, but of course that's cheating. Okay, I have no reason to believe that this is necessarily true in the two-dimensional limit. So it's an open question whether or not this, the states that are seen in, for instance, in the simulations in IPEPS, whether they have some kind of topological character to them or not. I don't see any reason why that should be the case, but the only thing I have to my contribution here is that the cases I know where I can prove in, by strong correlation physics that there is a pair density wave is that in one dimension is certainly this appear to want to be topological. So I wanted to raise some of these questions. I don't know if this is of interest of people, at least of maybe of interest of a few people. Yes. No, it isn't. Okay. The only thing that it appears to be the case is that there is a close competition between the uniform D wave and the pair density wave. That's one argument. And in this regime here, they compete maximally, and you get that. So TC is very low. Okay. So TC, it appears that at the lowest temperatures, the D wave still wins, but by a very small amount. By the way, there is a nice argument due to Patrick Lee, actually, that I cite people when it's necessary, that one of the features of these pair density waves is that they have pockets of particle, of Bourlieu, of quasi-particles in two dimensions, if you do BCS theory. And so they actually will have an entropic advantage relative to the uniform D wave because the uniform D wave has nodes, whereas this actually has, there will be an extra entropic contribution coming from these pockets of quasi-particles. So even though the uniform D wave may be the actual ground state, at some very low temperature, the other one may actually win due to this entropic contribution. It is superconducting, yes. So here it is superconducting in, okay, NLBCO is superconducting in the planes. So this is actually the reason why we propose this state. In NLBCO, essentially what you have is a bunch of layers. And below, so let me actually discuss this briefly. Let me have here temperature. And there is a temperature, this is at 1/8, precisely at the 1/8 anomaly, at about 54 Kelvin charge order appears. So you see these static stripes in charge. They see that in X-rays. At about 42 Kelvin, you see spin stripes, spin order. And this, of course, is the right answer for everything. Below 35 Kelvin or so, you see quasi to the superconducting fluctuations. And at about 18 Kelvin, you see a costal established transition in the plane. So the layers appear to be superconducting, but the C-axis is still resistive. You only see the resistive transition appears at TK, so at 10K. So this is where the C-axis resistivity goes to zero. Here, the AB plane resistivity goes to zero. So there is this range where the layers are superconducting, but the whole thing is not. The stack is not superconducting. And that's already rather strange. You would think if you have a bunch of two-dimensional superconductors, there should be a Josephson coupling between them, and the whole thing should go superconducting. So something is frustrating the Josephson coupling. That's sort of a simple argument. And if you assume that the superconductivity is oscillatory and has this sort of crisscross, structure, which is what the LTT lattice structure suggests, you gain, essentially, you get the vanishing Josephson coupling between them. And then the Meissner state appears at about 4 Kelvin. So this is the full Meissner state. And so presumably here is some kind of D-wave superconductor of the conventional type. Presumably it coexists with some kind of stripiness. I don't see why it should go away. So probably it's like the striped superconductor that we heard about today. The phase diagram actually looks more like this. The phase diagram of LBCO is exactly that. And experimentally, what happens is that inside these lobes, when they apply a rather weak magnetic field of the order of a Tesla, they get immediately this layer decoupling effect. So it appears that the state that competes with a uniform D wave is some sort of pair density wave. If you want, the simple explanation would be that, because you get this layer decoupling effect at weak fields. The same is seen in lantern strontium copper oxide in magnetic fields which are larger, like 8 Tesla, but in the underlobe regime. You see a vanishing of the Josephson resonance. So it appears, at least in the lanthanum materials, there is some rationale for thinking that this is a good competitive state. Now, I don't see why, what is special about lanthanum that is not in yttrium that will make it unlikely to work with yttrium, except, okay, so there are details matter for these things, but certainly there is more magnetism, and the other case there isn't some. So there is this cascade, if you wish, a sequence of phase transitions that is rather unusual to find. And notice that all of these TCs are, you know, they differ by factors of 2 at most, whereas the TC of the antiferromagnet, you know, is like 500, whatever it is much bigger.
Let's see. 54 and 42, they are
thermodynamic. Those are thermodynamic transitions, yes. Actually, in some sense, all of these transitions are rounded by this order. You have to be careful because they break translation symmetry. And the material is quasi two dimensional, so this order is important in this.
What about the decoupler? Is it possible to have the decoupler theoretically? Yes, it is possible.
If you have a uniform superconductor, no.
But what about fault layer coupling?
Sorry?
What about fault indirect tunneling?
So what you can do, no, what you can have is essentially a second order Josephson coupling. So what the pair density wave prohibits is the lowest order, so it's the tunneling of quasiparticles, of Cooper pairs. But pairs of Cooper pairs can actually tunnel.
But also you could tunnel the full layers, right?
Sorry?
The ones which are separated by full layers, those are the same.
Oh, but those things are so far away. In principle, you could have that. But with a sample size that one has, even though it's macroscopic in size, is too small to actually. So in principle, it should become actually a uniform. Yeah, if it is truly in the thermodynamic limit. Yeah, but the distance for these 4 layers is so big that.
Right.
But if you don't put this order, if you want to do just a pure theoretical argument, in principle it's true, you can have a direct Josephson tunneling through this tag. But it's usually exponentially small. Going through all of this is essentially impossible. Yeah. But you cannot couple. But it will not disorder the superconducting phase. It will disorder the relative phase, which is sort of like the charge density wave part. And that's the part that is pinned. That's why, in principle, these transitions are rounded. In principle. And this is very strange. This is the only example I know. Typically, in a superconductor, when this happens, that happens. So this is suggesting that probably some sort of glassy state here. And there is a candidate, the pair density wave has a nice feature that, so if you take this to be a cartoon picture of the pair density wave, the phase shifts by pi in half a period, essentially, that because it has to oscillate. But if I put a dislocation of the charge order, then there is a missing phase of pi. And that means that a single dislocation is equivalent, carries automatically a half vortex to it. So if you have essentially some distribution of dislocations of the charge order due to the disorder, they will come with these pi flux objects attached to them already. And that's probably what's going on in this regime here. Maybe the flux already penetrated there, so to speak, because of that effect. And so this is already rather strange. There is actually quite a bit of hysteresis, actually, which is seen more or less from here. And there is, of course, time reversal symmetry raking also seen from the Kerr effect, like in everything else that people have looked at, that is also present here. Yeah, and here too. And that's how that relates to this beats me. But okay.
Recently, Roger and
Sudhir
analyzed the X-ray data in ABCO,
YBCO,
using some
SO6 theory. Yes.
That combine D wave superconductivity with some charge wave, charge density.
Yes.
So,
with bidirectional order, they assume. So that's why it was SO6.
There are some almost.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. So. I think the same, if there is an approximate symmetry between those two, then I think some charge density wave also connected.
Okay, so if you want to do this, actually, we wrote a review of model physics with Tranquilla and Kibelson recently, and just for the sake of it, we counted the number of Goldstone modes we get up to SO10. We do even better with this, because they are both you have two complex order parameters for the superconductor, and if you assume it's bidirectional, so it's even bigger. Now the problem, that actually poses an excellent question. From the Landau theory point of view, you need to do an enormous amount of fine tuning for the TCs to be comparable in that case. And the material doesn't seem to want to do that, seems to want to do it for better reasons. So it's not multicriticality what is going on here. So the fact that the TCs are rather comparable is one of the puzzles.
But maybe I think.
Fine, I don't care. But even in those cases, I mean, the question is, why does this happen? Multicriticality is a very special accident normally. And as we saw, I mean, you can see this in the experiments, you see that also in his simulations. The fact that the energies are so close to each other over a broad range of parameters means that the TCs are probably comparable. If you suppress one, the other one comes up with full strength. And if you have competing orders at a Landau, that is an incredible accident. You have to essentially fine-tune all of the quartic terms to be just right, and all of the stiffnesses and all of that. You have to do an enormous amount of fine-tuning for that to work. So that's actually, for me, is a mystery for why this. So there is a physics question there that needs to be addressed. As a phenomenological way of understanding the data, is fine. But if you want to understand the physics of this, you have to explain why they are so close, not at one particular composition in one material, but in many materials and for a broad range of parameters. So there is a question here.
There's some experimental effort to detect some resonant mode between
what?
Between, say, charge density and pair density.
There is actually a way to do that. So in the sense of order parameters, you can expand essentially the superconducting order in harmonics. So the uniform D wave, let me call it delta naught, if it is present, is that. The You can also write down something, say, for unidirectional order that will look like this. And if you want bidirectional, you put more of those. Okay. Now, let's say this is absent. This is a complex field. And therefore, these two guys are not a complex conjugate of each other. So a pair density wave has two U1s, has two complex order parameters, namely has an average phase and a relative phase. And in fact, you can see that the relative phase is related to the charge order, to the charge density wave, because delta Q times delta minus Q complex conjugate can couple only in a translation invariant system with a component of the density, which is has wave vector 2q. And this is actually seen in the experiment, in the sense that if you replace, instead of delta q, you put the spin density wave. So this relation between the ordering wave vector of the spin density wave and the charge density wave is precisely, this is seen in the experiment. Okay. On the other hand, okay, let me still work without that. I can also take two of these guys. This is now translational invariant, but this breaks gauge invariance. So it suggests that you can get a superconducting order parameter which is uniform that will make this gauge invariant. But this guy has charge 2e, and this has charge 2e. Therefore, this is a charge Fourier superconductor. So in fact, the vortices of this guy are precisely these half vortices that I drew here. And actually, by the way, we found this charge Fourier as a subdominant order here in the MRG. It has power law correlations. It has a larger exponent, but it's still power law. So it's consistent in that sense. That's another question. So you can imagine now a process by which you restore translation invariance by melting essentially the stripiness from here, and then what you end up with is with a charge Fourier superconductor, which is already a rather exotic state, if one could do that. So on the other hand, if you have the uniform component, now you can have delta naught times delta q star. This actually makes it gauge invariant, but breaks translation symmetry. Now you have a component of the density wave with the same wave vector as that of the pair density wave. So this is actually a way to test for these ideas, is to come down here and look for an additional component of the charge order when it appears, either here or inside here. And people are looking for that. They haven't found it yet, but maybe the amplitude is small. I don't know. So yeah. So essentially, what you expect is the 2q peak presumably will get somewhat suppressed as you enter the slope, because it will still, it's rather robust here, so it probably will not disappear immediately. And then the 1Q peak will have to come up if it is inside the uniform D wave. So there's a striped superconductor that we heard about today is a state that has all of these things in it, all of those components. And so there you do expect this property.
In which state is the superconducting state of the quantization?
If it existed, we haven't found it yet.
What is your prediction?
The prediction is that if you could melt the stripe without getting rid of the superconductivity out of a pair density wave, it will become a charge Fourier superconductor. But already here, this half vortices in a sense means that there is some sort of a subsidiary charge Fourier superconductivity present. And actually, in these simulations, if you wish, in these DMRG calculations, we do get this charge for the component. I mean, in a sense, it's automatic. Once you break translation symmetry, this has to appear. It's not a big surprise. as a composite order parameter. What is strange here is that the order parameter is already a four fermion object. So it's not bilinear.
Okay. Is there like symmetrism like that object carries some quantum number that the single, the bilinear?
Yeah, that's the point. So this is actually, it's SU2 invariant, as you can see by construction, is parity odd, and it has the wave vector that is inherited from that. So it has a momentum, if you wish, in that sense. It's a finite momentum state.
You cannot make that out of a bilinear?
No, well, you can in principle, but the problem is if you do that here, they decay exponentially. As I said, all of the bilinear operators decay exponentially. So it's a very unusual. It's a very unusual situation in that sense.
That means that none of the bilinears mix with this. Have the same quantum numbers as that.
So it means that no. But if you look, so you can look at the usual D wave, and that this decays exponentially, and so does the nail state because of the spin gap, and the same is true with the bilinears of the charge density wave. They also decay exponentially. But these composite operators don't. So it's a rather exotic state in that sense.
Is it parity that prevents mixing that from a singular?
Well, already the momentum doesn't do that. Oh, the question is, can one have a case where this is parity even? I don't know how to do that. Because I need to make it into an SU2 invariant. Actually, there is another ladder which is not very physical, where all of this comes from the charge sector, but it's not a very physical model, and probably I shouldn't discuss it in public. It's a simple model, but it's not a model. I mean, if you simply take a ladder and you put pi flux in each one of them and study this with exotic, you just simply with U, large U, V, and some exchange interactions, and you do bosonization, then you get a picture much like this, but coming from the charge sector instead.
Spin cyclic.
Decay of exponential. Yes. Right. So it's very strange in this sense. Okay.
It's clear that the transition is second order, the finite temperature.
Here, so far as we know, yes. There is no. So actually, here there are excellent measurements of the universality class. We know that it's an XY model with great precision, and this is the only example of a superconductor where they could study the critical fluctuations. Actually, is YVCON. So it is actually continuous. Yes. So. Yeah, I don't know. Good question. So there are many things here that I don't think we understand. And I think good numerics will be great for this. It's important. Yes?
No,
it's a charge density wave. It doesn't carry current. It's a zero. It's a state at zero.
Because you have finite momentum.
No. It's a pair density wave. It's not a charge density wave. It's a pair density. It's a superconducting state with finite wave vector. It's not a moving. It's not a sliding charge density wave, which is what you think by a current. A charge density wave also has a wave vector.
I mean, because the Meissner phase is different from the superconducting phase.
No. No, it has momentum means simply that the superconducting order parameter is not uniform, but it's oscillatory. That's what this momentum means. It's essentially is the inverse of it. It's a period that.
So they have no current.
There is no current. It's not a superconductor with a current in the ground state. There will be a uniform state.
But if you apply some magnetic flux, you can also make the carrying at some finite momentum. But
yeah, of course. Yeah, that's not what this is.
Okay. That's what is the difference?
is on average a superconductivity zero in a sense. So it has, as you can see here, it has two superconducting order parameters. There are two phases. You can make an average phase, which will be the usual phase of a superconductor, and a relative phase, which is essentially the phase of the charge density wave. That's what it means. That's all it means, essentially.
So this looks like L state.
Sorry? This is a Larkin-Ovchinnikov state without a magnetic. It's a self-generated Larkin-Ovchinnikov state. In the BCS picture, you need a large Zeeman field to produce that, and it has been observed and then unobserved many times. And the most recent observation that seems to have survived so far in the organics, I think, is from last year, but it's not clear that if, well, that one at least has not died yet, but it has a fairly large field. And by the way, there is a heavy fermion superconductor. This is the 115, forgot which one of the 115s is, but in some high fields, it's so-called Q phase. And in that phase, they see this anisotropy of the transport that is actually seen here. Very similar. It's not as pronounced as in this case, but it's quite pronounced for these other materials. So it's possible that it's some sort of pair density wave in high fields in that case. Now, that may well be a Larkin-Ovchinnikov state as well. Who knows? From the point of view of symmetry, there is no difference between a Larkin-Ovchinnikov state and this state. The only difference is that here, one doesn't need a large polarization field, okay, which is what a low state requires, that the Fermi surface of the up spins and the down spins is split, right? Here you don't. So it's sort of self-organized, if you want. So it's coming from the physics of strong correlations, apparently. That's all I can say.
Okay. Okay.